Today is Monday, May 16th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, NATO and the U.S. express concern on membership bids by Finland and Sweden to join the military alliance.
We will try to speed up that process as much as possible. Many allies have stated that they will find fast tracks, as for instance Germany has indicated that this can go quite fast.
President Joe Biden calls for national unity against racial hatred in the wake of the Buffalo shootings.
Jill and I, like all of you, pray for the victims and their families and a devastated community. I've been receiving updates from my team in the White House that's in close contact with the Justice Department.
And Somalia's parliament re-elects former President Hassan Sheikh Mahmoud. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. Ukraine says Russian forces are withdrawing from around Ukraine's second-largest city after bombing it for weeks. Officials say Moscow's troops are pulling back from Kharkiv in the northeast while launching mortar artillery and airstrikes in the eastern province of Donetsk. According to Ukraine's defense minister, the country is, quote, entering a new long-term phase of the war after more than 11 weeks of fighting. Kyiv and Moscow are in a grinding battle for Ukraine's eastern industrial heartland. Also Saturday, a U.S. Senate delegation led by Republican leader Mitch McConnell met with Zelensky in Ukraine's capital. McConnell says it is in the national interest of the U.S. to help other countries deter wars of aggression before they start. NATO and the United States said on Sunday they were confident that Turkish concerns would not hold up bids by Finland and Sweden to join the Western military alliance in response to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Finland's President Sauli Niinistö confirmed that his country would apply to join the alliance, while Sweden is expected to follow suit promptly, moves that have angered Russia. Turkey, which has surprised its allies by saying it has reservations about Finnish and Swedish membership, laid out its demands on Sunday on the sidelines of a meeting of foreign ministers in Berlin. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said at a news conference with German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock that the alliance is ready to discuss the admission of the two nations.
We will try to speed up that process as much as possible. Many allies have stated that they will find fast tracks, as for instance Germany has indicated that this can go quite fast. But anyway, there will be a time period between application and a full membership. It is clear that Finnish and Swedish membership matters for NATO. We will look into ways to provide security assurances, including by increasing NATO presence in the region, in the Baltic region, in and around Finland and Sweden.
That's NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg. President Joe Biden is citing the shootings in Buffalo, New York, in calling for national unity as a remedy for what he calls, quote, the hate that stains the soul of America, unquote. Biden used his remarks at a Capitol ceremony honoring law enforcement officers to decry what he said his Justice Department has labeled as a, quote, hate crime, a racially motivated attack of white supremacy and violent extremism, unquote. Authorities say that a white gunman in military gear attacked shoppers and workers at a supermarket in Buffalo on Saturday, killing 10 people. Most of the victims were black. U.S. President Joe Biden.
A lone gunman, armed with weapons of war and hate-filled soul, shot and killed 10 innocent people in cold blood at a grocery store on Saturday afternoon. Jill and I, like all of you, pray for the victims and their families and a devastated community. I've been receiving updates from my team in the White House that's in close contact with the Justice Department. We're still gathering the facts, but already the Justice Department has stated publicly that it's investigating the matter as a hate crime, racially motivated act of white supremacy and violent extremism. As they do, we must all work together to address the hate that remains a stain on the soul of America. The hearts are heavy once again, but a resolve must never, ever waver.
That's U.S. President Joe Biden. Despite U.S. President Joe Biden's urging that members of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations take a firmer stance on the Ukraine war, the U.S. ASEAN summit ended without a condemnation of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Analysts say it is a sign of geopolitical complexities in the region as the administration seeks to broaden the coalition against Moscow beyond Europe. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widas-Kuwara has this report.
The Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, has avoided criticizing Russian President Vladimir Putin. Many in the group seek neutrality, including Indonesia, which has resisted pressure to exclude Putin from the November G20 summit in Bali, despite Biden's and other Western leaders' threats of a boycott. Indonesian Foreign Minister Retno Marsudi.
Our hope is to see the war in Ukraine stop as soon as possible, and we give the peaceful resolution of a conflict a chance to succeed.
It's a sign of the geopolitical complexities in the region as the administration seeks to broaden the coalition against Moscow beyond Europe. Stacey Goddard, professor of political science at Wellesley College, via Skype.
The Biden administration sees ASEAN countries as a vital partner in a competition with China. So it's not willing to sour relations over a statement about Russian aggression.
The U.S. announced a total of $150 million in initiatives for the region in climate and health infrastructure projects, including $60 million for maritime security. A concern for many regional states wary of Beijing's increasing militarization in the South China Sea. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris.
We stand with our allies and partners in defending the maritime rules-based order, which includes freedom of navigation and international law.
While many question the low dollar figure amid the tens of billions of dollars being poured into Ukraine, the summit signaled a U.S. focus on the Indo-Pacific region. Said Gregory Poling, Senior Fellow for Southeast Asia at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, via Skype.
Diplomacy is about showing up, and most everybody showed up. Despite the focus on Ukraine, President Biden and most of the U.S. government took out 2 days to spend on ASEAN. So in that sense, it was a success.
U.S. and ASEAN leaders also expressed concern over the crisis in Myanmar and commitment to denuclearization in the Korean Peninsula. Patsy Widas-Kuwara, VOA News at the White House.
Somalia's parliament has re-elected former President Hassan Sheikh Mohamud following marathon voting in Mogadishu on Sunday. The voting took place in the heavily guarded Mogadishu airport, with African Union forces securing the Afisonia tent, the venue of the voting. In a joint session of the two houses of parliament, the upper house and lower house, 327 lawmakers voted for 36 presidential candidates in 3 rounds. For more on the significance of the vote, I spoke with senior editor of VOA Somali Service, Harun Musub.
This was a very important vote because there has been a long election process in the country that started in 2020, December. That's when the mandate of the Somali parliament expired. And in Somalia, usually the parliament elects the president because the country does not yet agree on having a popular election where the people can directly elect the president. So because it has taken so long due to differences over the constitution, over the election process, over influence of the election, it has taken so long. So to see the completion of that long process was a relief to many Somalis. The other significance is that this is another exercise by Somali politicians of a peaceful election that fairly took place in a democratic manner. There were claims of irregularities at the beginning at regional level, but today's voting in Mogadishu was seen as a fair democratic exercise, and there's going to be another peaceful transfer of power in the country. So that is also very significant for Somalia.
Now, with this out of the way, will this in any way reduce the political tensions, the bickerings, and possibly the violence?
This will definitely reduce the bickering and the political tension for the time being. But the new president, Hassan Sheikh Mohamud, is not new to the politics. He was president previously between August 2012 and February 2017. He has a lot of tasks ahead of him. Is he going to reconcile all the bickering sides? Is he going to complete all the tasks that required to be completed, including completion of the constitution, fighting Al-Shabaab, stabilizing the country, restoring good neighbor relationship with some of the neighboring countries, in particular Kenya and Djibouti. These are some of the tasks that lie ahead for the new president, but it might not reduce the level of attacks that are coming from Al-Shabaab. Al-Shabaab has been fighting in Somalia for nearly 15 years now, and they have seen presidents come and go. The strength of the organization remains intact. Their sophistication in carrying out attacks against the government and African Union forces remains intact. And this is the biggest threat to any government in Somalia. So the new president knows quite well about Al-Shabaab. The question is, he only has 4 years. Is he going to find all the answers to all these problems? The Al-Shabaab problem, the constitutional problem, the election problem, and reconciling all the different bickering sides.
With all this myriad of challenges facing him, what should be his priority?
Ironically, the president who was just elected, when he was elected back in 2012, he came up with six-pillar policy. That's what he called it. It included stability, restoring public services, reconciliation, economic recovery, and so on. But at the end of his term, he could not achieve any of them because there were so many priorities for him. Maybe this time he will be more cautious, and probably he will select one or two targets that he can achieve. First of all, it's going to be stabilizing the country, because the country is not stable. Al-Shabaab controls most of the countryside. They are able to carry out attacks at will.
That's Haroon Maruf, the senior editor of VOA Somali Service, speaking with me from Washington, D.C. Drought is not new to the Horn of Africa, but experts say the record heat killing crops and cattle across Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia has underscored the increasing frequency of drought due to climate change. In Ethiopia, the UN's World Food Program is not just feeding those affected, but also working to help drought-proof communities for the longer term. Linda Giftash reports from Gode, Ethiopia.
Hawu Abdi Wale has lived through many droughts in her 70 years of life. But until now, she says she's never seen four consecutive rainy seasons fail. Wale says she has seen a big difference. In her early years, she says people used to see more rains and animals produce more milk. There is a big, big difference. The World Food Program is helping her village not only survive the crisis, but rebuild for the long term. They're digging meter-wide semicircle holes in the barren soil to capture runoff water when rains return so that grass can grow more effectively and feed their surviving livestock. Forward-looking interventions are desperately needed. Scientists say climate change is the culprit for these more frequent, severe conditions. Abubakar Saleh Babakar is with the World Meteorological Organization in Ethiopia.
The climate in this region is driven by what is happening in the neighboring ocean. There are studies that indicated that this is the fastest warming part of the tropical ocean system. So it is warming rapidly during the past 100 years. And this warming, as I said, it is associated with the dryness of the marsh dune season.
It also results in flooding when the rain does return. These events aren't just examples of climate change, but inequality. Haptamu Adam is a climate policy expert in Addis Ababa.
When you compare from the emission level from our contribution to the climate change, it is very uncomparable, because most of the emissions are emitted from developed countries.
Yet developing countries like Ethiopia don't have the funds to fight the effects. The World Meteorological Organization estimates that sub-Saharan Africa will need up to $50 billion annually to adapt to climate change. Without it, the number of people displaced and in need of aid will only continue to rise. Ali Hussein is with the World Food Program in the Somali region.
We need to build the community resistance to these shocks. And in that line, we want to put more emphasis on these regreening activities, such as half moons, to regenerate this dry desert area to become a greenland in the future, which can be more useful to both communities and as well as livestock.
These projects around the Somali region are showing success and could be replicated to help more people. Ibrahim Korbad Farah is an elder of a village that saw its land restored with the construction of a channel that is effectively diverting streams and rainwater. He says they've experienced numerous advantages. They're now able to farm and use the grass for livestock, as well as thatches for their houses. He says they also use the water for drinking, especially for the livestock. While adaptation is crucial to communities' health and survival, climate scientists warn reducing emissions remains a priority in preventing even worse conditions in the future. Linda Giftash for VOA News, Gode, Ethiopia.
In other news, an array of presidents and prime ministers were descending on the United Arab Emirates from around the world to pay their respects to the Federation's late ruler and greet his successor, Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed Al Nahyan. The visits that continued on Sunday were a vivid sign of Abu Dhabi's influence in Western and Arab capitals. The first Western leader to jet to the oil-rich capital of Abu Dhabi was French President Emmanuel Macron. He met with Sheikh Mohammed to pay tribute to Sheikh Khalifa bin Zayed Al Nahyan, the country's long ailing ruler who died on Friday at the age of 73. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson arrived late Sunday, praising the country's strong ties. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. U.S. President Joe Biden has called presumptive Philippine President Bongbong Marcos Jr. to congratulate him on his election win. He's among the first heads of state to reach out to Marcos Jr., whose landslide win brings full circle the Marcos family's decade-long project to return after Filipino booted out the family through a bloodless uprising in 1986. But the recent Philippine elections had many irregularities, including problems with vote-counting machines. Some Filipinos protested immediately the day after the election to the return of the Marcos family to national leadership. From Manila, Stanley Buanefe Gahete has the story.
The son and namesake of the former dictator told Filipinos that he could no longer contain his gratitude for his lead in the unofficial count. With more than 98% of the votes counted, Marcos Jr. has about 31 million votes, more than double that of his closest rival, the outgoing Vice President Lenny Robredo, who has about 40 million votes, according to the Commission on Elections. Official results, however, could take weeks to be confirmed. Known as Bongbong in the Philippines, Marcos Jr. is the son of Ferdinand Marcos Sr., whose 21-year rule was marked by human rights abuses and widespread corruption. Analysts says Marcos Jr.'s rise is the culmination of a decades-long attempt to rebrand the Marcos family's name and image, most recently through social media. He urged his supporters to continue to guard their votes and continue to support him should he win as president.
I wanted to issue a short statement, and it essentially is a statement of gratitude to all of those who have been with us in this long and sometimes very difficult journey. For the last 6 months, I want to thank you for all that you have done for us. There are thousands of you out there, volunteers, parallel groups, political leaders that have cast their lot with us.
Marcos Jr.'s initial tally already surpassed President Duterte's more than 16 million votes in the 2016 elections.
Any endeavor as large as this does not involve one person. It involves very, very many people working in very, very many different ways.
Senator Manny Pacquiao ranked third in the presidential race with about 1.7 million votes. Meanwhile, various issues arose on voting day due to malfunctioning vote counting machines. As early as 7 a.m., some were complaining on the unmatched results of voters' receipts. Other machines did not operate, which resulted in the manual writing of votes. The Board of Election, meanwhile, advised some to file complaints directly with the Electoral Commission. Conrad Sandoval is a senior citizen and voter.
I suggest you to change that machine because the following voters, it disappear. That is wrong. That is not the will of the people. That is the will of the machine.
Meanwhile, immediately after the elections, various groups held protest rallies in Manila questioning the results given problems with the vote. Crowds were shouting that Marcos is the same as Duterte and that Marcos is a coward. Bongbong Marcos only campaigned for unity but did not provide a clear agenda on the pandemic, the economy, national debt, or foreign affairs and security, especially regarding relations with China in the West Philippine Sea.
Marami hindi gusto ang kasalukuyang kalakaran.
Renato Reyes is the Secretary General of the activist organization Bayan. He says many do not accept the results of the election. They all ask how a candidate who did not participate in any presidential debates and did not provide clear plans for the country immediately win hands down. For VOA News, I am Stanley Buenafegajete in Manila, Philippines.
In the world's driest inhabited continent, engineers are hoping to challenge Australia's long-running opposition to recycled water. Although popular in other parts of the world, Australians have been squeamish about drinking purified sewage. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu Afo in Washington, wishing you a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
An Istanbul court sentenced Turkish civil rights activist and philanthropist Osman Kavala to life in prison for allegedly attempting to overthrow the government. Kavala was first arrested in 2017 on charges related to the 2013 Gezi Park protests in Istanbul. The demonstrations grew into a nationwide year-long movement against then-Prime Minister Recep Erdogan's increasingly authoritarian rule. A court later acquitted Kavala of the Gezi Park charges and ordered Kavala released. He was immediately rearrested on charges of taking part in a 2016 coup attempt against President Erdogan, which resulted in the death of at least 250 people and the eventual detention of over 110,000 people, including civil servants, teachers, activists, and journalists. In addition to Kavala, the Turkish court sentenced seven other defendants to 18-year prison sentences for aiding the attempted overthrow of the Erdogan government. Among them was 71-year-old architect Mujala Yepici, Istanbul municipality urban planner Tayfun Kahraman, and documentary filmmaker Çiğdem Mater. The United States is deeply troubled and disappointed by the court's decision to convict Osman Kavala, among others. His unjust conviction is inconsistent with respect for human rights, fundamental freedoms, and the rule of law, said State Department spokesperson Ned Price in a statement. We again call on Turkey to release Osman Kavala in keeping with the European Court of Human Rights rulings, as well as to free all others arbitrarily incarcerated. The United States remains gravely concerned by the continued judicial harassment of civil society, media, political, and business leaders in Turkey, including through prolonged pretrial detention, overly broad claims of support for terrorism, and criminal insult cases. The people of Turkey deserve to exercise their human rights and fundamental freedoms without fear of retribution, declared spokesperson Price. The right to exercise freedom of expression, peaceful assembly, and association is enshrined in Turkey's constitution and its international law obligations and Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe commitments. We urge the government to cease politically motivated prosecutions and to respect the rights and freedoms of all Turkish citizens.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.